memory corruption. And when you come to think of it, even the type safe languages have been implemented in unsafe type, non-type safe languages. So there can happen memory corruptions can also happen there. So in recent years, the traditional stack smashing has been become a bit more difficult, where you used to be able to inject your code on the stack and then jump past the address of the of your code on the buffer. In the return address of a function, so it would jump to your shellcode has become a bit more difficult. For once, you first have to guess where your shellcode will end up, or have means to find out. Also, buffers are as are usually modern operating systems try to. Such as Ubuntu and Fedora, by default have distributions have by default turn on stack canaries, so that when you overflow a buffer, there's a special value on the stack protecting the return address to a function from being overwritten. So when you overwrite it, your stack canary gets messed up, and your program will abort. Also, there's now usually a split in your address space between memory that's executable and memory that's writable. So it's not so simple to just insert your shellcode so that you can jump to it, because your shellcode will probably not be executable. And then there are smart compiler constructions where unsafe functions, where usually bugs are made a bit more safe by checking at compile time the size of the buffer, and then instead of overflowing your stack, you will get something like this, and your program will abort instead of leading to arbitrary code execution. And those things are really good, and I think, for example, package maintainers should really turn on all the hardening features that your operating system and your compiler give you. But those things are still not enough. So, countering the non-executable data, there's a technique where you can jump to existing code in your in the binary, which does what you want, and then you can execute code that way, for example. And then ASLR, so the randomization, address space randomization, can be circumvented if you can find a memory an information leak where you can find out where the addresses are anyway. So take, for example, a bit older vulnerability in Nginx, where there was a bug in the normalization of your URL. So you would pass Nginx a URL with double dot notation. So it would first enter a directory and then go back, which and then Nginx would normalize it. as one function pointer, and this leads to arbitrary code execution. And then through some simple steps, you could find code in the original program, and this program, and this would lead you to get shell. So this attack defeats address space randomization through a memory leak I haven't shown there because it would take too long. But it also defeats non-executable data because you just execute code in the executable itself. It doesn't use standard functions which are protected by fortified source. It's not a return-oriented, it's not stack smashing, so stack canaries wouldn't have mattered. So in this case, all these measures haven't worked, but in reality, the situation is worse. So all these things need to be enabled at compile time, or, well, maybe except for address-based layer randomization. There is a lot of code out there that hasn't been compiled with these options, so it's still unsafe even on modern systems. Even if you have the source, such as usual in open source software, many package shares just don't apply these mechanisms because it's just a lot of work and maintainers don't know how to enable it, or they think it will slow down the system too much. And of course, these countermeasures sometimes have flaws in implementation. So the question arises, can we do more? So if we think of it, data execution prevention, so the splitting data from executable code, it prevents the untrusted data from being run as code. And the counter to that is return-oriented programming, where you replace the untrusted code by pointers to trusted code, but the pointers themselves are untrusted. So what if we can prevent pointers to code from being used as jump addresses if they are not trusted? So it turns out we can do this by a mechanism called taint analysis. But it comes at the cost, it's slow. So taint tracking can be used by mark data which comes from, for example, the network or any data input that you do not trust as untrusted. And then whenever the data is copied, you also copy the trust value. So if you move something that comes from the network to another location memory, that location also gets tainted. And if you add two values together, then the result will be tainted if at least one of these values are tainted. And if you clear a piece of memory, you clear it. Or overwrite it with trusted data, you clear the taint. So now you have trust information about data in your program, you can use it when you have instructions in your code which load an address from memory to jump to a code address, such as return or a call with a register or a memory location as argument. And whenever you did it, you test the taint value of the code, so that if the pointer came from an untrusted source, you know something is wrong. I just let the program crash instead of continue. So it's a bit like you can corrupt all the thing, all, designed a new memory layout for the process. So this is usually the picture of a 32-bit address space on Linux. So you have one quarter of the address space, the high quarter, which is in use by the kernel, and then the three quarters below it is in use by the user space program. So you can also look at this like this. So we changed it a bit. So now about one third of the address space can be used by the user program. And then there's an equally sized portion which is used to hold the taint data, so to track whether the data is trusted or not. And then there's a part in use by the emulator, and of course a quarter by the kernel. The program is executing actually the part from the emulator is shielded by use of segmentation. So what is visible, what is addressable by the program is these two parts, the user memory and the taint memory. So say if I want to write something to address X, we have to propagate the trust data to the memory location X plus a constant, which is a constant offset for every memory location, because it's just a one-to-one mapping. So the way it's laid out like this makes it possible to we don't have to do any boundary checking, because for every write we do an additional taint propagation rule. Which means that if you do taint propagation, if you try to, you might be able as an attacker to write into taint memory, but then the propagation will crash, because then the taint propagation will be in unaddressable memory, so you will get a segmentation fault. Address this shadow memory, we use a kind of a neat trick. So for every addressing mode in Intel, say here you want to address a piece of memory in, which is at location at the location stored in the register EDX. We can also address EDX plus a constant. Without changing the registers, we can just add a constant to the instruction and then we can address this. And this works for every addressing mode, even the more exotic ones. So here, the address is given by EDX plus EBX times 4, and we can also address this. And then there is also implicit addressing, so here the stack pointer is used to write memory to, and then we just add a constant to this and it works fine. As a second optimization, we emulate a processor without SSE instructions, but we demand that the processor you run it on uses SSE, has SSE instructions, and we use SSE registers to propagate the taint. So say we use one SSE register to hold the taint value for four general purpose registers, the SSE instructions are very well suited to do taint propagation. for various CPU-bound operations, for real-time CPU-bound operations, we've measured up to 3 times as slow as native code. So this is, for example, the lower example is SSL, and that's a lot of operations on arithmetic operations, which leads to many added instructions. So we tested it against backend, and which had an overall slowdown of about 2.4 times. It was overall 2.4 times as slow as native, and also we tested it against some other real-life applications, among which the MediaWiki stack, and it had about a slowdown of 2.4. While it captures many memory corruption attacks, it's not perfect, so there are a few limitations. It only works when it doesn't track the program at the point of memory corruption. It only traps it when it's being used to have arbitrary code execution. And there are also some problems. You might be able to whitewash your data. For example, if you do a table lookup, the actual data from the table is used. So if it's translated from a table, the trust value from the table is used and not from the input. The reason for this is that it can lead to false positives if you have a dispatch array of functions which is matched against input and, for example, bound checked. So it might be safe, but it will lead to false positives if we would propagate taint this way. So we don't, because we can't have false positives. Format string attacks have a peculiarity because they count you count the number of characters written, and then you can write it to an arbitrary place in memory. So in some cases you can circumvent taint tracking this way. And also it only finds arbitrary code execution. So for example, in this example there's a buffer overflow because a string copy is used on the buffer here, and it might overwrite the actually used, but it's just a hack so that I don't have to worry about memory allocations. But you can see that that, for example, here Nginx is emulated. So I can run an exploit on Nginx. So it's kind of neat. So instead of being exploited, it just dumps the data about what happened. So MinMu is open source. You can get code from the website. The website, by the way, is running under MinMu, and there's also ProFTPD server running on the MinMu, which you are allowed to try to exploit. So, any questions? So currently it's only a 32-bit version because, well, I have ideas how to implement it in 64-bit. So the problem with 64-bit is that on Intel you have you can add this extra constant which I use, which is 32-bit, to have an offset. So the trick wouldn't work entirely, so you couldn't have an offset of 64-bit, so that you could just split the entire address space. There are two methods I can think of. So one method is just don't allow very huge chunks of memory allocation, and then just interleave the tamed data and the non-tamed data, which should work for most programs. Another one is to emulate the segmentation. So on 64-bit, most segments are, so the data code and stack segments are bound to zero, but FS and GS are not. So the taint operations might be able to just use one of the extra segments, and then just have an offset which can be more than 32-bit. I haven't done any performance tests, so I don't know exactly how the CPU will react. So that will probably be specific to the CPU. And yeah, so I still have to do the tests. Anyone else?
Yes.
So if you don't it wouldn't see the counter as being from untrusted data because it's just a counter initialized from zero and then just added. So that's a problem with MinimU, and that way you could circumvent it. If you use the normal trick of adding a lot of characters, so say, okay, I want to write this character and pre-pad it with 60,000 bytes, then glibc will introduce it into the counter. But if you just fill it, it will not. And in that case, you could try to catch it by creating a hook and then just check the format string while it's being called. So you have the taint data of the string itself, and then you can check. And maybe just if the binary is called with fortify source and it's and your system has a very, very new libc, then it should probably also be okay, because then